Hello, everyone, and welcome to TPE Network Presents Movie Reviews Podcast. I'm Hank Davis, and I am joined by not one, but two amazing co-hosts today. We've got Alex Cruz in the house. How are you, Alex?
Hey, doing excellent. Hi, everybody.
And we also have, from the Superhero Report, John.
Hey, everybody.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, we're going to keep the format the same as we do for all our spoiler-filled reviews. Remember, this is spoiler-filled. If you've not seen Avengers Infinity War, turn this off now.
I'm going to warn everybody ahead of time. I'm probably going to have to whisper like this because I have two people in my house that haven't seen the movie yet, and they want to be spoiler-free of it. So, no, I'm just kidding. I'm not really going to talk like that.
As we often do, we're going to talk about the setting, characters, some wins, some problems, and then we'll give our overall rating for it. And we have a piece of feedback as well for this one. So let's talk about settings first. And I want to just get your overall take on Earth, Titan, Vormir. Was anything in any of the settings to you broken or anything of that nature? That's what I want from you. So let's start out with Alex. Alex, what did you think of all the various locations?
Okay, I kind of thought they used too many, and it got confusing after a while. Of course, I'm familiar with Titan. Titan is one of the moons off of Jupiter, I believe. Of course, in the Marvel comic book universe, this was indeed our background for much of Thanos. However, I didn't get that impression, though, when we watched the movie. It was almost like Titan was a planet of itself and had really nothing to do with its previous history, comic book lore. And then the other world, I don't know. I was a little confused. The biggest confusion for me was that world and then the world in which Thor tries to get that new battle axe.
Okay, where he goes to see the dwarf.
Or he goes to see, what's his name from Game of Thrones?
Tyrion. Yeah. He talks to Tyrion about the recent Game of Thrones spoilers.
Yeah.
The movie took a big turn there. John, what about you?
Well, I mean, I really like the you know, they gave us the flash, a pop-up saying where they're at. And when they went to get the Star-Lord, and you're like, space. And we're all like, no kidding. You know what? I thought they did really well with how they space the stuff out. Like, you know, okay, I've read the Infinity War series. I don't remember a lot of Titan because I'm pretty sure that Titan wasn't on there. A lot of the Infinity War happened on like some like kind of platform in space that Thanos created and was torturing everybody on. So Titan to me was kind of a new thing, but like his explanation of everything, like, you know, how the world once was and how he came up with a solution and basically it was genocide. And he was like, yeah, but it's an answer. But then chalk that up with, you know, our Earth settings. You know, of course we got to go back to Wakanda and we got the joke saying, you know, that we're going to open up Wakanda, you know, to the world, you know, at least we get like a Starbucks out of it. That was nice.
Yeah.
The other thing though, that wasn't a planet. That was more or less a space station. I'm trying to think what it was called. Oh, that's right. They went to nowhere too. Completely forgot about that. Oh, yeah. I was disappointed in nowhere because I was really expecting it not to be completely destroyed. We were going to at least get to have some goofy minutes there, but that's not what happened there.
No.
So, I mean, it was pretty messed up, but basically just a space station around a star that they used for the forge.
Yeah.
So that was neat, and that was kind of like giving more backstory because there is a historical there is a lot of stuff on the legends and lore of Thor and, like, you know, the dwarves that made all the weapons, and basically they did whatever the name of this location is that I'm trying to find.
Nidavellir.
Thank you. Yeah, that. And that's you know, in the Norse mythology, and in this case they just turned it into like a real place, which was some star out in the middle of nowhere that nobody knew how to find except for apparently the Asgardians. Although Rocket was really interested in seeing that, and we know the person with all the guns would love to see the place that builds all the guns.
Yeah. I really liked Earth. I think every time they do a movie, Earth seems to have the scope and the scale. And then when they try to do other places, they don't give you a sense of it being like an entire planet. It's always like in the original Thor, it was like, and here's the palace again and the Rainbow Bridge. I think that's what they do. They just kind of make it feel small sometimes in these other areas. And
yeah, it's kind of like Star Trek, because, you know, Star Trek, we would go to, you know, a various world, and all you do is get the aspect of the place you're in at that time. And then it seems like the writers over years kind of center the whole world around just, you know, kind of like that one aspect. I would say it's probably more of a writer thing.
Okay. Another thing on setting wise, well, what set the tone for the setting was the music. And for me, some of the music was hit or miss. In space, they used a lot of sounds that really made me think Star Wars. I understand Disney owns both properties. I get it. But
not only that, Skywalker Ranch also did the sound for him. So that kind of stands to reason.
Okay. It was a little too close to Star Wars for me. Just my opinion. What did you guys think about the music?
Well, I mean, you only had one song really for the soundtrack, and that was Rubber Man.
When they were flying in space, they kind of had some of the orchestra type music in the background, like.
I thought that it was very well put together. They set the mood just right for a lot of these scenes with the music.
Okay, so you didn't feel any pull towards Star Wars?
Well, I mean, if you're anything when you start dealing with space and you start putting very large orchestra pieces in, and there's nothing that you can think of outside of Star Wars.
I can think of plenty of movies that can do music in space without it sounding like Star Wars. Even Guardians of the Galaxy didn't sound like Star Wars to me.
Well, yeah, because Guardians of the Galaxy had an entire soundtrack that was actual songs, not orchestra pieces.
Okay, let's move on to characters. And we're not going to touch on every character, obviously. We're just going to touch on the top characters. Thanos, we'll start out with him. In my opinion, the CG effects worked sometimes, and then other times did not work for me. Kind of pulled me out of the story. What about you, John? We'll start with you.
I read a lot of information like afterwards, because I was trying to stay away from that leading up into the movie. But like, I thought that he did a really good job of like being able to pull off a lot of Thanos's feelings without him actually having to say or do anything, you know, with like a little smirk here. You know, but whenever we got to Vormir and he was like, you know, crying, I'm like, I don't believe that he's crying. I'm like, I almost feel like he shouldn't have tear ducts. And that right there, that entire part right there where he had to basically sacrifice Gamora, I was, you know, that would have been the only part in there. I wasn't too thrilled with the animation, but everything else in the movie, I thought it did a terrific job of being able to contain their crazy animation that they could possibly have come up with.
Alex, what were your thoughts on Thanos?
I absolutely loved, I thought the CGI was quite good. I didn't have any complaints. I don't know if this ties in, or please let me know if I'm overstepping my boundaries. I thought some of the choices on the writing that were different than the comic book were quite refreshing and new.
As far as his character?
As far as his character goes, okay. Because in the original Infinity Gauntlet and even prior, Thanos, his whole goal is to impress Lady Death. Death is in a personified form as a female, and he is deeply in love with her, and he would do anything to impress her. And so in order to impress her, that's when he went after all the Infinity Stones to make the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah,
and then his main kind of impression was to, with a snap of fingers, eliminate half of the population of the universe. And so what the writers did, they changed it drastically. And I thought it was refreshing. it was almost like the reason why he wanted to get rid of half the population was because the living beings in the universe are drastically wasting away the natural resource of the planets that they inhabit. And to me, that kind of makes sense. That almost kind of parallels what's going on in our world today. So I do like that, because I think it would have been a little too predictable had they gone, you know, the full comic book route and did exactly what, you know, Jim Starlin originally had written him to be. I thought that was really cool. But again, I think I'm digressing big time from your original question. And that's, you know, the CGI. I loved it. The Thanos that I saw in the comic books wasn't quite as, I guess, emotional, and with the tears coming down after what he did to Gamora. Yeah, that was a bit uncharacteristic. And maybe it gives us viewers kind of like a sympathetic tone towards him, which you normally don't do with a villain as nasty as him.
Let's move on to Robert Downey Jr.'s portrayal of Tony Stark. And I think it is consistent, obviously, across every movie he's been in. He keeps that character going in the direction that you would expect Tony Stark to go in. All snark and some good quick on his feet thinking and planning, and maybe a little bit of a short fuse as well. Did you think Tony Stark came off pretty well, John?
Yeah, no, the only thing I didn't care for as much, because it needed more explanation, and I'm wondering if the prequel comic or book will have it, but like why he put the arc reactor back in his chest. I mean, is it sitting on the outside of his chest? Is it embedded like it was before? I mean, they made this kind of like little spin saying, oh, you know, just in case of blah, blah, blah. And then Pepper was like, you know, that's not a thing anymore. So I think I really wish they would have given a little bit more explanation of that. Even if they turn around and said it is specifically for the nanobite Iron Man suit, then that would have been completely fine. But besides that, I mean, he is that role. It's just like Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool. Like when you say the name Tony Stark, I automatically think Robert Downey Jr. now.
Yeah. Alex, any thoughts on Tony Stark?
I thought if anything about Tony Stark that differed from some of the other movies, I kind of felt he was a little bit darker in this movie. Oh. Not quite as jovial. I mean, he was jovial in some parts, but you know what? This is, well, just there's a lot of serious stuff going on here. And so, you know what? He really has every right to be a little bit more serious this time around.
I'm going to clump a couple of characters together since we last saw them in Thor or Ragnarok. So if you have not seen that movie, you might want to jump ahead a little bit. But I'm assuming you have if you're listening to this review. Chris Hemsworth and Mark Ruffalo, obviously Thor and Bruce Banner. We didn't get a whole lot of Hulk. That was kind of a bummer for me. But I was happy that they kept the Thor version from Thor Ragnarok pretty much intact, with the humor, and some of the funniest scenes were with him and the Guardians. It just hilarious stuff. So I think they did a good job with him. I would have liked to seen Mark Ruffalo be able to be the Hulk, obviously, but it was cool to see Mark Ruffalo himself portraying Bruce Banner on the screen most of the time. I thought he added a lot of depth to the other characters and filled in the blanks when we needed it. Alex, let's start with you. What did you think about Thor and Bruce Banner?
I thought, again, it was pretty consistent with what happened in Thor Ragnarok. I did like it how another new aspect of Hulk that really wasn't quite explored. At the very beginning, Hulk is unleashed and for the first time in his life gets an ass whooping. And so it kind of seems like, and then he went into, you know, Bruce Banner and almost kind of shown fear that, no, I don't want to come back out because I don't want to get my butt kicked again by Thanos. And you know what? We have never seen a side of Hulk like this. And again, it's quite refreshing. And now kind of to play off what John said, there are a lot of things that happen between Thor, Ragnarok, and this film that haven't been explained too well. Tony Stark was one thing that John alluded to. And another thing, too, when we're aboard the ship that has kind of like I think we called it an Asgardian arc, we're missing some key characters from this arc. And so hopefully that'll be revealed in the next movie as to their fate or what became of them. And I'm referring to Valkyrie and some of the other gladiatorial characters.
Yeah.
Like Meek and those guys.
Cool. So. Yeah, Watiki's character, the rock guy.
Korg.
Yeah.
Korg. I mean, thank you. I thought the same thing, too. I'm like, you feel that they would have passed over their bodies if they wanted to wrap that up a little bit.
The producers
didn't happen.
The producers have come out and said that they will address that in the next one. So they will fill in all the holes.
Well, I wonder if it's like, you know, as that ship is showing up, they realize something's going on and then everyone just kind of bolts. Well, I mean, sorry, they send Valkyrie with Korg to, I guess, get help.
Apparently, two or more shuttles were able to escape before Thanos completely boarded the ship. So that's what the story is.
Okay.
So we'll find out how that plays out. Let's get to Steve Rogers. We won't call him Captain America because he wasn't Captain America in this. He was Steve Rogers. And I like the grit of his character. I like the I'm done asking for permission and all that kind of stuff. Really felt good to see his character develop and just be so much different than that true blue American pie kind of guy. Alex, what were your thoughts on Steve Rogers?
Well, Steve Rogers to me is always going to be Captain America, even though he wasn't in a mask, so to speak. To me, he's still Captain America. The rest of the Avengers look to him as that. So even though he's not in the uniform, so to speak, he's still Captain America. And I think the best line was when the Wakandans, they're getting ready for this major battle. And Black Panther says, somebody get this man a shield.
Yes. John, any thoughts on Steve Rogers?
Well, I mean, they're really like trying to pop that nomad character. You know, he's got his uniform, but it's been so beaten. He's torn off all the stuff that kind of made him Captain America, but it's so battle damaged now that you could basically get down to like the scales that made up like his uniformed armor and his entire like, you know, we're just going to get this done. Attitude is very much Captain America from Civil War. In fact, I just watched Civil War over again just a couple of days ago, just to kind of get that feeling of everyone there. And it was a lot reminiscent of that.
I want to just cover just a couple more characters really quickly. Paul Bettany as Vision. I really was disappointed with Vision in this movie. He just seemed like a total pansy, for lack of a better expression. And that's not the Vision I grew up with in the comics. Vision I grew up with in the comics was like a game changer. And he just seems so helpless. And I know he got damaged early and that affected him and such. But it just seemed like they wrote themselves around how he would normally be able to defend himself and help himself out more. And they just wrote him as a sympathetic character. Alex, your thoughts on Vision?
And well, with that, there is a reason why they did that with Vision. And I understand. And they kind of, you know, kind of established there's something going on between romantic wise between Scarlet Witch and Vision, which, you know, it pertains with the comics, I guess. The one thing I guess I dislike, but it's not a major dislike. I thought they made the Vision almost too human. And the Vision in the comic books, you know, if again, we're following the comic book lore, isn't quite human. He's more kind of, I want to say, cold and distant, kind of Vulcanish, I guess we could say.
Okay.
So I didn't, that's the only part I didn't quite like. But again, it wasn't a game changer where I hate the movie just because what they did with Vision. That's fine. I thought it did well to, you know, kind of establish the relationship between Scarlet Witch and the Vision. Again, not a game changer. So,
okay. John, any brief thoughts on Vision?
I think that they try to tone down the character that's almost kind of godly like. Just they brought him down to a more like mortal standpoint. I mean, seriously, if you look at everyone that's in the Avengers, he is basically this. He's OP'd like crazy because of the stone. So the simple way of trying to knock him down and bring him down everyone's level is to take him out of the game right away, and that was to injure him, which basically made him relatively mortal. So I thought that, you know, keeping that under control, it was pretty good, because if not, they still would have come for Vision, and Vision would have been just wiping out that entire army at the end there without any problem. So I feel that what they did with Vision, it was a good way of trying to take him down some notches so he wasn't so OP'd in the movie. But him trying to portray the more human aspect. I mean, he was able to just generate that cape out of nowhere. So, I mean, I could totally see that he would just create skin like normal and try and play off looking like a human. But, you know, you're right. Paul Bettany had a very, depressing role of being the injured person. Oh, you know, somebody help me. But, you know, it's besides that, it's I can't ask for any more in the movie. I mean, with the part that he played and what ended up happening to him in the end, I think that he's one of the ones that won't be coming back.
And lastly, I wanted to bring up Loki. I know he has a very brief appearance in the film, but it is very, very, very pivotal. Did you like how they portrayed Loki with having a soft spot for Thor after all the events of Thor Ragnarok? And did that work for you? And did his death raise the stakes of the film for you? Alex, start with you.
I think if anything, right at the end of Thor Ragnarok, I thought it gelled quite well. I know the directors did indicate that there were some deaths that just won't be reversed, I guess I could say.
Okay.
No resurrections, and I kind of believe Loki could possibly be one of those.
Okay. John?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the what everyone's expecting to happen probably two movies ago. I mean, how many times have we seen him die now? This is almost like the Phil Coulson moment, you know? He's the one character I've seen die the most.
Yeah. Nice.
So he dies more than anybody else I've ever seen. There you go. That was the line. No, you know what? He tried to do standard Loki things. You know, he still has a soft spot for his brother. He hates him, but, you know, he's still his brother. He did grow up with him. So you get those moments every now and then where he wants to do the right thing. But at the same time, you know what? In the D&D world, this is just called like a neutral evil. Meaning he's evil, but evil doesn't mean that he's always doing bad things. It just means that he's looking out for himself only and doesn't really care about everybody else. So he more or less is like, you know, oh, well, you know, if he's going along in this path and it just so happens to help him out in this journey, then of course he's going to go along with it because it's for him. So in this case, it was, you know, he knew it was over. There is no way that any of them were getting out of this. So the only thing he could do was possibly throw out some standard Loki tricks and try and swindle and betray him and stab Thanos. And of course, that was tossed right out the window right away. So, you know, having him basically just, you know, dead in this, it does raise the stakes. And again, I think he's another character that we're not going to see come back.
All right, let's move on and get into some wins of the film. Either one of you want to take the ball and run with a win in this film, or would you like me to go first?
Well, I had something else I wanted to ask you guys. I want to know who your favorite comedy duos are. So your choices are Rocket and Thor, Rocket and the Winter Soldier or White Wolf. Now I got to think of the other ones. Oh, Doctor Strange and Iron Man, Peter Parker and Iron Man. And I think that was the last goofy one. So which ones are your favorites out of those?
Oh. I think mine is definitely Peter. I like the interchange between Peter and Tony. I thought they played off quite well off of one another. And then a very close second would be Rocket and Bucky, simply because there's that line in which Rocket looks at the arm and says, oh, I want that arm. And of course, this is a reference to the first Guardians of the Galaxy film. And that, you know, that brought a chuckle.
You didn't even name some of the better pairings, like Thor and Star-Lord. That was amazing.
I didn't think that was as funny. I mean,
you
did have that scene where they're trying to play, you know, all the big role.
When he was doing the voice. Come on now, that our whole theater was erupted into laughter. It was something special.
Yeah, I have to agree with Alex. That was one of my favorite parts, too, when he picked him up and he was like, how much for the gun? It's not for sale. What about your arm? It's just I mean, it's just so a Rocket thing to say that, you know, they're in the middle of this like life or death battle and he's just looking for things that he might want to get later on.
All right.
Because hypothetically, that's where the eye came from.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on and get through some wins real quick if we can. I thought getting this many characters on screen and having different pairings and the pairings that they chose, definitely a huge win. I also think that telling a cohesive story with as many movies as they put out prior to this and with all the different characters and trying to stay consistent with that, other than the Peter Parker 8 years later and then the Battle of New York was actually 6 years, but whatever. Just making the whole story work, to me, gigantic win. Any major wins in this film that you really, really liked, John?
Their call outs to all the previous movies. Like, I had to go back and I caught a lot of them in the movie theater, but I wanted to see how many there were. And they're like 70 some. They just keep on rolling with them. Like, I had a really good example. Actually, the eyeball one was a really good example because that one's all the way back from, I think the first, I don't think it was the last one. No, it was the last, Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He's like, why'd you steal the eye? He's like, cause I wanted to. And, it's just, they called back to so much stuff and having them be able to keep that together. I'm just trying to picture them like basically at the great big giant table, laying down a great big map and being like, okay, well, he's going to talk about this, but this happened over here. And then you've got this stuff that happened from this movie that's over here, but we're connecting it to this. I mean, it's like, I almost feel that it's a requirement. You know, when I tell everyone, like, well, what movies have you seen before you see, go to see Avengers? Because there's some key ones that you probably should see beforehand because they're going to be brought up to a point where you might miss something because not seeing them. You know, primarily Black Panther, Captain America, Civil War, Spider-Man. I mean, because you're going to miss a lot of the stuff.
Alex, any big wins that stuck out to you?
I think probably easily one of my favorite scenes are right near the beginning when Hulk is transported to Earth and he crashes through Doctor Strange's house. This is kind of a nod to the comic book in which this same thing happened to the Silver Surfer. And, you know, he came racing back to Earth to warn everybody of Thanos. And, of course, unfortunately, Marvel Studios at the moment does not have access to Silver Surfer. So Hulk is kind of doing the same thing. And so Bruce Banner is that vehicle to warn everybody of Thanos's soon to be arrival and to be prepared, kind of like the Paul Revere role. I do like that a lot. I really liked how Thanos also, how he, you know, kind of obliterates half the population of the universe. And it was a creepy way, I thought. They kind of like turned to ash and just disintegrated before your eyes and just blew away like they never existed. Where the comic book was almost instantaneous. He snapped his fingers and these people were gone.
Okay. Yeah, it's more dramatic to have them.
It's more dramatic that way.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't instantaneous either. It was like gradual.
Well, that's something directly out of the comics, too. I mean, that was how he ended the universe in the comics, just by snapping his fingers. And that was it. Right. So that was their toss out to the comic book.
All right, let's jump into some problems. And I would like to start with, how come no one tried to cut Thanos' arm off instead of just trying to stop him from closing his freaking hand. Iron Man generated about 50 million swords throughout the movie and never once thought to try to slice his arm off. At least attempt it. And then Thor didn't slice his arm off with a freaking axe. Nope. Stuck it in his chest.
Well, that was just like what, you know, he said in the movie, where it's like, you know, if you're going to do that, go for the head.
Yeah, but just if you need someone to not be able to close their fist, why not take their arm off?
And well, let's kind of take that thought even one step further. Doctor Strange had the gem of time.
That's my next.
How come he couldn't go back in time and prevent this thing from happening to begin with? Because as we saw, Thanos used that idea and prevented what originally happened with Vision.
He never used it at all. It didn't seem, did it?
Okay.
Did
I actually have like the defense for him because he was my, when going into the movie or when he got to the point, I was wondering why he didn't just pull that same trick he did with Loki for at least a little while.
Or Dormammu. But then
he took that moment and he sat and he looked at what like 11,000 different like outcomes. And I think that was the reason why we didn't see any of these other things that he could have done, because he knew that they weren't going to work. He's already seen that they're not going to do it. And that's why at the end he gives the stone up, because he knows that the one scenario that they win is that they have to lose everything because they win in the end.
OK, I kind of get that. But I think just as a fan, doesn't it seem like you could just trap him in that loop like he did to Dormammu?
You're right. But he can't, because remember, he had he has the reality stone. And the space stone. And at some point in time, he can break himself out of that by combining the other stones.
OK, so even if he rewinds just a little bit, he can never beat him doing that.
I don't think so. Okay. Because, see, in that case, you're looking for a specific loop. If you're trying to get him to go back in time and like stop him from doing stuff, you know, Doctor Strange already says that he doesn't want to use the time stone any more than he absolutely has to. And actually, like, reverting back time isn't something that they really ever want to do. Remember the big deal that it caused in his own movie. But if he were to create the Loki trap that I was talking about, only thing he needs to do is and activate them the space stone or and then just basically pop himself out and bridge himself somewhere else. I mean, you got to think, if he's got the power of all the other stones and they're only looking for basically like the time and the mind. Like, those other stones have the capability of doing lots of other things.
Okay.
And really, I think your key point is that the reality stone is probably what would have held a lot of that up.
Okay. Another problem I had was the characters that they chose to kill, to me, were terrible choices, because we know they're doing Spider-Man Homecoming 2. We know there's going to be a Black Panther 2 with the amount of money that movie made. And it really lowers the stakes when it's characters you know are coming back. I think if they would have chose other characters that you're not sure are coming back, that would have raised the stakes a lot more. Any thoughts?
Yeah, we know most of these are going to be temporary. At the end of the film, though, it's kind of what I call a Back to the Future 2 ending, kind of a cliffhanger. So you have to wait a certain amount of time to kind of wait for that resolution to it. And I don't like those type of movies. For Lord of the Rings were like that too, but we knew they did that on purpose. However, yeah, we're going to have to wait for almost a whole year. And we're going to, in the meantime, we're going to be having an Ant-Man film coming out and a Captain Marvel film coming out. And I know the whole thing with a Captain Marvel film, it's going to kind of set up as a prologue to Avengers 4.
Yeah. Well,
because she's going to play a major part in the fourth Avengers film.
But they're both movies are prior to Avengers.
Yeah.
Infinity War.
I'm kind of wondering what role Ant-Man is going to play in Avengers 4, and that's going to be that again. That's going to be revealed probably in the new Ant-Man film coming out.
I hope one of them, though, gets taken out at the end with this snap, because it would be so funny if they're shrunk and it's just like a little bit of ash, just a little tiny ash. All right. Hulk was clearly shown running in Wakanda in the previews. Was he or was he not? Am I making this up or did you guys see that too?
Oh, it was just, it was cut. It was one of those scenes and they're working out a better way of using Hulk, I guess, for the next movie. At least that's what I heard. And I sure do hope that they hold that up, because I'd be very disappointed that Hulk's too scared to fight the rest of Thanos's minions. I can understand if he doesn't want to fight Thanos, but these are Thanos's minions and a whole bunch of, you know, red shirts that aren't going to survive. So,
right.
What's there to be scared of?
That's exactly the point I was looking for. But that's kind of false advertising. I really thought we would see a little more Hulk, especially towards the end. And it was disappointing that we did not.
Hulk is going to be a major player in Avengers 4. I think that's going to be the kind of the tide turner in the fourth movie.
All right. I hope so. And lastly, for my problems, you know, this is just minor picks. When Thanos puts the Veronica suit and Bruce Banner into the rock, and then at the end of the movie, he's just like out of that rock. Like the suit is not any more damaged than it was before that. I thought that was kind of weird.
Into the rock? I'm trying to think of that. Yeah, what happened?
Thanos used the Infinity Gauntlet and made him like go into the rock, like the mountain.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. I was thinking of like when he brought the moon down, but I'm like, but Veronica wasn't there for that. Sorry. I know, I get it. You know what? And I was thinking, like, doesn't that make him instantly dead? Wow, this is going to throw us off. I guess, Alex, you should be on board with this. Wasn't this a Star Trek episode called The Pegasus, where they had this small ship that had a cloaking device on it that was able to phase through an asteroid? And then when it reappeared itself, it was half in an asteroid, half not, and people died because they were caught in between. Yes, I know that yep. Episode too well. So hypothetically, I would see that he would have been in the rock, and then the rock would have just come back, and then anything that was in the place of where, you know, he would stay through, it would just be gone. It would just be rock. So
yeah,
but clearly that's not what they're doing. But you know what? Whatever.
All right. Anybody else have any other problems you want to bring up real quick?
I mean, I sat down for 2 hours and 40 minutes, and basically, as soon as I hit the credits, I was like, is it 9:40? Oh my God. I don't feel like I sat here for more than an hour.
Time travel.
Oh, it was. Yeah. The movie being seamless like it was, like it moved. Oh, no. You know what? There you go. It just hit me. I have my problem. It's just that when we need to make a shirt of this, you know, don't be a Peter Quill. So, or you know, don't Peter Quill things up. You know, basically, he had one job.
One job. Where is she? You're like, oh, dude, really? Right now? We almost have this off.
So yeah, Peter Quill. We can blame all this on Peter Quill. It's all his fault.
That's what I'm gonna do.
That's what I will do. All right, it's time to dole out our ratings for the movie, John. We're going to let you go first. What are you giving this?
Oh, this is easy. A 10. I've waited 10 years for this. It's getting a 10, man. No, I went in there expecting with high hopes, and I left there with high hopes. The only thing that ever made me upset was the parents that sat next to me that brought their 5-year-old child, not expecting half the movie cast to die. And so now the kid's like crushed and he's over here crying because they all just died. I'm like,
are you serious? They brought a 5-year-old to this film.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. A lot of people.
Yeah. Brought kids. What is wrong with parents?
And I'm thinking, what do they think was going to happen?
A lot of people brought kids. You know, I'm African American. I'm a black male, and there was this group of black guys behind us, and one of them started crying at the end, and the other four just started laughing at him. And so it was a tearjerker movie for a lot of people.
Hey, that Peter Parker, you know, saying I don't want to go, that was kind of a choking up scene there.
Yeah, heck yeah.
And I think how he went too, it was kind of slowed down, because usually the other people, they kind of went quickly, and he knew he was going, he felt it, and it seemed like a while longer.
He had that suit on, that's why.
dramatic. But oh, the suit, that was something I wanted to bring up. There you go. That was a plot hole. So you drop in your plot hole, your voice right now.
You've got plot holes.
And why? Okay, so he's disappearing, right? And I'm Tony Stark with a busted suit. And I can be like, hey, before you leave, let me grab some of those nanobites from your suit there so I can try and fix mine real quick.
That is great. That is great. Oh my gosh, that's great. Let me just have that suit. Could you just get out of that suit before you? Oh, you're gone. Alex, what are you giving this movie?
Oh, I agree with John. This was easily a 10 for me. I give it a 10 out of 10. It held my interest. And I wonder if, I know why they did this, but I'm kind of thinking if I were the directors, I don't think I would have had any end credit stuff like we're customized to every single Marvel Studios film. I think that Nick Fury thing, maybe I would have had it right before the credits rolled, just because this movie in my mind was a game changer for Marvel Studios. So we'll see if I feel the same way in a few years about this, but I really believe that right now.
Yeah. I am giving this a 10 as well. I had some minor issues with it, but for the most part, this movie was just outstanding. It just felt like a culmination of my entire life of, you know, just as that kid going, wow, it'd be so cool to see blank character on screen and it really be done well, not the crappy 80s attempts at some of these characters and such, but just to have it look this way and to flow like this and all these characters that you feel so invested in, even though they're not real, obviously, it just felt amazing. There were a ton of people in our theater anyway that were crying around me and stuff, and I was just sitting there trying to just take it all in as far as just how much was going on with this movie. It was phenomenal. Loved it. I don't know if you can ever recapture these types of emotions. I don't know if you can ever do that to this level again, in my opinion. We'll see. All right, we have one piece of feedback, and then we're going to step behind the spoiler curtain for one thing pertaining to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Infinity War. So Mel sent us a voicemail with his thoughts on the show. Take it away, Mel.
Hey, this is Mel from Anaheim. Just wanted to call in about Avengers 3 and give my feedback. So love Infinity War. I'm not sure how it's going to tie into the rest of the Marvel Universe, because other than that mention that Daisy and Mac's old best friend had about New York, I'm not sure what else is going to happen, because, did half the Defenders die? And also, as far as the sequel, it's supposed to come out May 3rd, 2019. So is it going to be a year that passes between now and, you know, the next Avengers movie? Or, you know, is it a day later or something like that? Because I can't imagine Avengers taking a year to solve this problem, which means, in theory, the whole Marvel Universe is going to be out of sync. I mean, I'm already told that Ant-Man is going to take place before the Avengers movie. Oh, yeah, so it's my second favorite movie out of all 19 Marvel movies. You know, I still love Winter Soldier just because, I mean, it was just a great movie. And I have that as my number one. And then as far as the deaths, I'm not worried about it. No, we know that Black Panther and Spider-Man, they both have sequels, so I'm pretty sure their deaths meant nothing. And all those websites, everybody predicted that Captain America was going to die because Chris Evans didn't want to be in the movies anymore. He wanted to eat real food. Well, I guess the joke's on them because he's still alive. Pretty much all the original Avengers are still alive, if I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head. But good movie. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Mel, thank you so much for sending that in. Guys, Mel was curious, you know, how does this affect Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Defenders? I am going to talk about something in the spoiler zone pertaining to that. But do you guys have any theories to put out there at this point? No, you know, no spoiler stuff, but just theory stuff.
I don't think that we would probably see anything except for mentions, because if everything plays out the way that it's going to, I bet you know, this is going to end up being like nothing ever happened, which is an easy way of saying nothing ever happened in the rest of these universes.
Yeah. Alex, any thoughts on that part?
I don't know if we're going to see anything this season in any of those particular shows, especially Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If we do, possibly near the end, because was it the end of the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where it finally started getting good and it started tying in with what was going on at the Marvel Universe? I think we had Winter Soldier on at the time. So I always hope and pray that they would be a tighter cohesive unit with the television. And so it's my thought that one of two things are going to occur. We're either going to get a brand new season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in which it will be addressed probably at the very beginning, or they don't want to address it at all and just wrap up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in a nice little bow and say, okay, we're going to kind of focus on Infinity War stuff, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of in the way of that.
Mel also brought up the time frame between Avengers, you know, this version of Avengers, Infinity War, and then next year's movie. Like, is it going to be a day? Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be months? Do you have any we're just spitballing here. Do you guys have any guesses? John, start with you.
No, I really don't have any guesses.
Alex?
I'm kind of thinking they would continue on right where they left off.
That's what I was hoping. I hope it's cohesive like that, but because the movies you're doing in between are both prior to that event. So
right.
It's not like you have to write around anything.
Right. Well, it's like I said earlier, Captain Marvel, I mean, I thought it was a nice, the ending of Avengers, especially after the after credit stuff, was a good tie-in to Captain Avengers, and then Captain Marvel. That's a new hero, by the way.
That's awesome.
Captain Marvel, that movie is just going to be an Infinity War prelude is all it's going to be, because it's coming out exactly just about a month prior to Avengers 4, because I think it's coming out mid to late March.
Yeah.
And then Avengers 4, which is untitled as of now, hopefully they'll reveal that sooner than later. That's come out just a little over a month, because that's going to be out the very first week of May.
Yeah.
So we have, I'm going to guess, 6 weeks in between, now probably not even that, more like 5 weeks in between. So
Mel said that this is his second favorite MCU movie behind Winter Soldier. Why does Winter Soldier hold up so well? I could watch that movie weekly and never get bored with it.
Because it's the one Marvel film out of all of them that's a political thriller that doesn't actually feel as so much a comic book as just a thriller action movie.
That's a great point.
What is there really comic book about it? I mean, you have Captain America and you have the Winter Soldier, but remove, all the Captain America BS from him, and you have, don't call him the Winter Soldier. Say it's like some Russian sleeper spy, and you've got yourself a normal, spy movie.
Yeah, that movie's phenomenal still. All right. Go ahead.
Anna was done by the Russo Brothers too, right?
Well, I didn't even think of that.
They did the last Captain America movie, the Civil War. I'm pretty sure they did that one as well.
Mel went on to say, dead is not dead in Marvel. We know that. So,
yep.
And the characters correct that they choose, come on, they're not going anywhere.
I do kind of agree. There's that article that the Nerdist put out. And I do kind of feel that the people that died, not part of the entire, like making half the population disappear, but like, for example, Vision, Gamora, like the ones that actually died. I think they may actually stay dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been a common thread. We'll see what happens. Whoever puts that gauntlet on, we'll see what they choose to do.
We'll see if Zoe Saldana is expected to make another Guardians movie.
She said in an interview, this was prior to the release of this movie, a long time ago, actually, that she was filming Avengers 4. So I don't know, it could be flashbacks, could be anything, yeah. but I just thought that was odd to make that statement. Mel said, kind of a little taunting statement at all the people that thought Captain America was going to die in this movie. And why did Thanos choose to just swat him aside instead of just breaking him in half? That was, that's my question, actually. Thanos did some questionable things in this movie, but we'll see how it all shakes out.
Mel, well, I honestly think that Thanos doesn't see him as a very serious threat.
Yeah, that could be it. He's like, hey, why are you holding my hand back? I'll smack you across the face. Mel, thanks so much for sending that in. We greatly appreciate it. And remember, if you ever want to have your comments on one of our movie reviews, you can do so by heading to tpenetwork.com/feedback and use the podcast contact form widget right on the page. All right, gentlemen, we're going to head behind the spoiler curtain and talk a little Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Warning, incoming spoilers. Warning, incoming spoilers. Warning, incoming spoilers.
You've been warned. All right, how do we end this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? That's what we're going to speculate right here, right now. I had initially thought it would be very compelling to make Coulson one of the individuals that turns to ash, but I've been hearing it everywhere, so I want to get off of that bandwagon because there's too many people on it. And so now I'm thinking, if you ended this season not knowing if you're coming back or not with just a would that be cool or what? And then it just goes to black. The end.
Oh, so what we're doing a Sopranos ending?
Yes. Nice. Yes. How would you end this season, potentially series, John?
I honestly feel this is the one time when I don't really have that much to say. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to see them end it, but I don't want to see them keep going through like some nonsense. And I'd like to see them reroute their way back into the MCU as a permanent fixture. So, I don't know what's going to happen. Here's what I would like to see. I would like to see that in this next movie that the Avengers 4, that towards the end of it, we see Nick Fury come back to reestablish S.H.I.E.L.D. back on the planet again, or even switch it up and go as far as S.W.O.R.D. And then what that reflects back into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because now they're a legitimate company or organization again, and they can come back out of the spotlight, not leaving Coulson as, you know, the person in charge, but putting him back to like a high director and maybe, putting... Now, I actually think Daisy Johns would probably do better just being almost the same rank as Coulson, but having Fury and basically, you know, the heads of S.H.I.E.L.D. come back in and like run it like they used to.
Yeah.
And with that, that's a good way of you can either end it there because now we're all back to how we started, or you can continue on and now it's tied to the MCU.
That would be wonderful. Alex, how would you end this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., potentially the series? Would you do any kind of Thanos took out the team? They all turned to ash. Would you do a finger snap? Would you do anything that ties to the movie? Would you stay away from all that and do something different?
Boy, that's a good question. I think what I would do, not necessarily because the writers have already indicated that at the end of the season if it doesn't come back, they kind of, you know, tied everything with a neat little bow. I think it would be great to see some of them turn to ash and be gone, because this is what's going to happen if that does happen.
Yeah.
You kind of have a time paradox because, you know, they all went back, or they all went into the future, and some of them, we do know what the outcome is going to be. I don't know. That's why I'm not a writer. So,
oh man. I mean, if they get trapped in a loop, they could say they avoid everything, you know, like if they fail and then they have to go back through this whole loop again, they could just be like, well, we failed and we had to go back through the loop, so we missed all of this stuff.
I mean, it could be, it's just Groundhog Day. Just bring Bill Murray in and then we, you know, I could sit here and just watch this episode over and over again. It's the episode of Stargate where they're golfing into the Stargate.
All right, gentlemen, any final spoilers before we call her quits?
Nope.
All right.
I'm good.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of TPE Network's Movie Reviews Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And what's the next movie we're going to do, gentlemen? What do you guys want to do next?
Is Han Solo coming out next?
Solo?
Yes. Okay. Solo, then Deadpool, then Ant-Man.
Okay. We've got our plate.
And the funny thing about that, all these major Hollywood blockbusters are all going to occur probably before the end of May.
Yeah, you know what? I was actually talking with a coworker about this yesterday, where, you know, I'm not saying this wasn't a good time to put out Infinity War, but if they held on to Solo, Infinity War, and Deadpool, and put those out for like August or September or even July, like when it's hot outside, you know, basically it gets even more people in, because now you're sitting in a nice cold air conditioned theater out of the heat watching a movie. And now they're going to just basically burn through all those movies before it even gets, like, you know, crazy outside.
Well, July 6th is going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp. So
yeah, but I mean, it's still later. Early in the, I'm talking like mid-July, towards the end of July, like when it's just, well,
it's still going to be hot.
Sorry. For me, where I live in my demographic, it gets hot, you know, around July, but then it gets real bad at the end of July. Although, who knows, with the weather it's been as of late, it could probably be July weather tomorrow, and I'm not even going to expect it.
Yeah, 82 in Michigan. All right, for Alex and John, I'm Hank. Until the next time, we're signing off.
See ya.
Hey, everybody.
Tiger Prince Entertainment.
There ain't nothing else like it.